Welcome to the Against the Stream Nashville podcast. We're very excited to announce that we are changing our name to Wild Heart Meditation Center. You can stay subscribed to the podcast as you currently are, or if you choose to join us again at a later date in the future, just remember to search wherever you get your podcasts for Wild Heart Meditation Center. We're excited to be introducing new facilitators to our group and expanding our presence in our local community. Enjoy.
And I wanted to talk a little bit more about some of the kind of traditional and maybe non-traditional ways of practicing relational mindfulness and what the Buddha calls wise communication or wise speech. So I'll talk for a little bit about this topic of wise communication, then we'll open it up for some more discussion. The Buddha emphasized the importance of relationships enormously in spiritual, on the spiritual path. It's one of the refuges in Buddhism, is community. And the Buddha said that the Sangha, or the community of Buddhist practitioners, or people that were interested in what we call the Dharma, were the whole of the path. Right? That we do not wake up alone, that we need other people, accountability, support, attunement, consistency from community in order to grow. The Buddha also said that there are two things that help us to develop a wise view or perspective. Continuous awareness, which is mindfulness and introspection, self-awareness, and the words of a wise friend. And I think a lot of our greatest insights, for me, I'll just speak personally, is that have come from other people. And today I was doing a recovery practice. It's called a fourth step, if you're not aware of 12-step recovery. It's an inventory of, in particular today, I was focusing on resentments with a friend. And this friend is a Dharma practitioner. He lives in Pennsylvania. He's been clean for about a decade. And we were on Skype and we were sharing. It's such a weird thing to think about. We were sharing our resentments with each other. And it was so amazing how quickly I got some perspective from just having someone with me and listening to me talk about resentment. You know, he was able to point out so clearly things that I've known, like up here, but that when I heard him reflected back, I felt like I intuitively knew what he was talking about. Like my tendency to people please, or my tendency to have expectations of others, and where that comes from for me, and how that leads to resentment. So cultivating wisdom, the Buddha says we need continuous awareness, mindfulness, self-awareness, but we also need the reflection or the words of a wise friend. There's also this list. The Buddha was a big fan of lists. There's this list called the five hindrances, which are like visitors to us during meditation practice. And you know, these hindrances, like craving, aversion, sleepiness, restlessness, self-doubt, they're things that are very frequent visitors to our mind throughout the day. And he lists something called the anti-hindrances, which are some things you can practice to combat these mind states when they come up. And one of the things that's in every list for every hindrance, something to combat that mind state, is noble friendship and suitable conversation. So the Buddha talked quite a bit about Sangha and community and the importance in, you know, our developing of insight. Because what we're trying to do in Dharma practice is really live in line with the way things are, right? And the mind has a tendency to project. The mind has a tendency to get, you know, fixated or stuck or narrow-minded. Or we tend to have, extreme thinking. Or we see the either-or instead of the both-and, right? We get caught in our own perspectives. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to see things more clearly. And we're all limited. I mean, we have one perspective. We have one history. And we're coming up against all these other people with their own histories and perspectives. I read this quote on New Year's Eve. It's one of my favorite discourses given by the Buddha on community. He says, "If you find no one to support you on the spiritual path, walk alone. If you see a wise person who steers you away from the wrong path, follow them. The company of the wise is joyful, like reunion with one's family. Therefore, live among the wise who are understanding, patient, responsible, and noble. Keep their company like the moon moving among the stars." You know, we know in our psychological development that our sense of safety, our sense of freedom to explore our world is created by the stability of the people around us from a very early age. And I talk about this a lot because it's been a very powerful reflection for me, the work of John Bowlby and Mary Ainsworth and something they call attachment, and how we learn how to think about the world and to feel resourced, like we can cope with the world by our interactions with our caregivers from a very young age. Meaning, how consistent are they? Are they close to us? Do they attune with us? Are they able to help us to mark our emotions, to understand what we're feeling when we're infants and we don't have self-awareness yet? And are they giving us the message that they're going to be there when we go explore the world and when we come back? And so relationship is really how we get a sense of feeling stable in an unstable world. And this is one of the truths that the Buddha is asking us to contemplate, that the world is vulnerable, it's changing, it's not predictable. It's fragile in a way, you know, this body that ages, that we experience separation, we get what we don't want, you know, surprises happen. And this isn't a morbid reflection, but really it's a matter of how do we find stability in an unstable world? Or another way to call this is sometimes they refer to as the groundless ground. How do we find a ground in a groundless experience? And we do this mostly through people. But some of the most difficult groundless experiences come through relationships also. So what I wanted to talk about is, you know, how we communicate and where we find ourselves disconnected, and how we can work mindfully to communicate with more clarity, more consistency, and more awareness. So the first thing I want to just talk about is how much we talk and communicate. You know, I seem to have this person in here that is just all day long commenting, comparing, figuring out, you know, the like inner narrator. It's like having a sports commenter just fucking living in my mind, you know? It's like, here he goes, he turns left, that asshole didn't put their blinker on, you gotta get to Kroger so you can make the next appointment. You know, like just like inner kind of incessant self-talk. So I just want to point out that we talk to ourselves, you know, that we talk all day long. And the Buddha is really encouraging us, you know, through inner mindfulness or internal mindfulness, to look at the mind and to look at not only how we talk about ourselves or what we say about ourselves or to ourselves, but the tone. You know, this is like practicing what's called loving kindness, is learning how to have a gentle tone. You know, learning how to have patience and understanding, like treating the mind like a little kid. And this voice in my mind's never going to stop. Just like I like to say, my eyes, if you're born with the ability to see, your eyes see, they always see. If you're born with the ability to hear, your ears, they hear, they always hear. If you're born with, you know, a nervous system that has access to all of your extremities and organs, you're always going to feel, and your mind's always going to think. And so we want to just kind of understand that this talking, this narrator, this voice in our mind is here. And we've got to learn to relate to it, to have a relationship to our own mind. That means, you know, some of its big ideas, I got to like keep it in check and say, hey, mind, not right now. We have to learn how to have healthy boundaries with our mind. We also have to be kind and gentle and patient and forgiving. But then there's all the external communication, which I really wanted to focus on and talk about. This includes nonverbal, verbal, and verbal. Research shows that the majority of our kind of gut feelings, as they call them, are experienced through nonverbal communication. So a lot of our kind of like unconscious reactions are picked up through, you know, what's the Buddha calls sanya, perceptions, that we experience people based on previous experiences a lot of the time. Nonverbal is huge. Gestures, facial expressions, appearances, like even what clothes we choose to wear is a conversation. Our postures, the difference or the distance between bodies. You know, also there are normative nonverbal communications. Do we shake hands? Do we hug? Do we bow? It's interesting to notice how these different gestures even create responses. So nonverbal is big, but then there's also verbal communication. Speech, writing, email, text. There are also social platforms, economic platforms, social media, slang, lingo. Some people have privileged speech, access to, you know, a wide variety of vocabulary because of their upbringing and their ability to learn in certain schools. So there's like privileged speech. It's interesting to think about all this. Advertisements, you know, how much speech is not really wanted. It's just kind of this, like, the Buddha calls it frivolous chatter, this noise. So it's a huge topic. The magnitude in which communication affects our everyday life is enormous. And what I wanted to talk about is, you know, where do we start and how do we find some ways of working with communication in a intentional way? And I think the first is really the exercise we did tonight, which is why I wanted to do it, which is attunement, you know, which is the kind of practice of sitting and listening. A lot of times throughout my day, I'm, you know, between things in my schedule, and I'll maybe run into someone and I'm half present but already somewhere else. And not to judge that. I mean, I think that's just kind of the way it is. But to notice those moments when we're not really attuned in the relationship or in the conversation. And then the second part of mindful listening, I guess we could call this, is attunement, which just means like actually tuning in. And then mindful listening is, how am I affected by what I hear? This is huge. I think this is, for me, one of the most immediate areas where I can practice mindfulness, which is when I'm listening, noticing what's coming up for me. Yeah, because a lot of my reactions, a lot of the times that I put my foot in my mouth have been that I wasn't really aware of what I was feeling before I spoke. You know, so it's like I felt triggered, or, you know, I felt hurt and then got defensive and then I shouted. So how am I affected by what I hear? And then am I clearly comprehending what I'm hearing? So that's another part that's really helpful, is to be able to gather more information. And this is something that happens a lot with miscommunication, which is we kind of get some information and we say, oh, I know this. I know what this is about. This is this lady at work being this annoying lady at work again. And I know how she acts and reacts. It's kind of what I heard shared tonight is this kind of like preconceived perceptions that we don't really stay long enough to maybe gather all the information or to ask more, to say, hey, I think I heard you say this. Could you tell me a little bit more about that? This is like the therapist's number one trick. Could you tell me more? That means basically the therapist isn't yet sure what to say and they just want to have you talk a little bit more first. So gathering more information means, am I clearly comprehending what I'm hearing? Really trying to understand. That's the principle of this third part, is understanding. So there's attunement, which means tuning in. There's this kind of inner observation like we did tonight. How am I affected or impacted by what I'm hearing? And then there's the understanding. Am I comprehending? Am I clear on what I'm hearing? So there are some other guidelines I want to talk about in wise communication. The Buddha offers this real simple framework that I actually quite like when it comes to speaking. And what he says is that one thing that can help to reflect on is asking ourselves the question before we speak, is what I'm sharing true? Is it useful? Is it timely? And is it kind? Meeting all four of those criteria. Is it true? Is it useful? Is it timely? Is it kind? For me, out of these four, I think, well, they're all interesting to reflect on. I could give a whole talk, or we could all talk for hours about just these four things. What does it mean to share something that's true? Well, it means being honest. It also means being authentic, right? Sometimes what I don't share is what's dishonest. Right? So sometimes not speaking up can be dishonest. And so these are parameters, are really a training kind of guidelines to look at, well, what does true mean in a new experience, right? Is it useful? Does it contribute? Is it, sometimes I have the tendency, I'm a very neurotic type. I have a neurotic personality type. So I just talk out loud everything that happens. And my wife has had to get used to this, that when I'm like freaking out about a bunch of things, I'm not actually freaking out. I'm just like saying all of my anxieties and fears out loud to her. But here's the thing, it's not very useful all of the time. So editing, and that's just one example of usefulness. There's so much more we could say. But for me, in this example, it's like editing is part of what's useful. Is it timely? Is it the right time to have the conversation? We've all experienced, maybe been on the receiving end of some conversations that weren't very timely. You know, where someone gave us some bad news via text. Right? Or I guess that's the medium. That could be another one we would add. Is it the right medium? But timeliness means, is it the right time? And last, is it kind? Kindness is a very ordinary word, and I think we're so used to hearing about, being kind. And you look at the Dalai Lama, it's a kind guy. This is a principle of Buddhism, but it's such an important contemplation, right? Kindness means not nice. It doesn't mean we can't be frank. It doesn't mean we can't speak up or be direct. It just means in the way that we communicate. It doesn't have to be so harsh. Now, if our life's threatened and we feel like, hey, I can use my vocal cords as they develop the full range and get some yelling going on here, probably not needing to check in on the kindness if your life's threatened. But I often feel like my life's threatened when it's not, and I am very unkind in those moments. And so looking at how we deliver, the speech, the tone. Another training parameter or reflection that the Buddha offered not as so much around wise speech, but really what falls under wise action, is the practice of taking that which is freely offered. So the other way to put this is that we're trying to practice refraining from taking what's not offered. And this, when translated into action, it means like not stealing. It means like don't steal shit, don't take things that aren't being offered to you. But I like this as a reflection with speech sometimes too. It's like when we can pry, you know, or when sometimes, you know, people, you get a sense they're not quite ready to share something, and we really want to resolve our own anxiety about it, and we feel like we need to resolve it right now, and so we just like kind of pull on them. And I've noticed, especially in romantic relationships, it's like one of the things that can be really helpful is if you and your partner are arguing, the argument doesn't have to be like 100% clear and resolved in 5 minutes. You know, like sometimes just being like, all right, it doesn't seem like they're very clear. Maybe if I'm being honest, I'm not very clear. I'm not going to sit here and try to pry and get the answer that I want. You know, maybe I can like take some time to just, I kind of like the term agree to disagree for a moment. Like that's part of what in my experience in Buddhist practice I'm trying to turn towards is sometimes feeling a little bit unresolved. Being mindful of frivolous chatter, like I talked about earlier, is another thing that the Buddha spoke, especially to his monastics about. You know, you get a bunch of monks and put them on a 3-month silent retreat, and they come out of that, and they got a bunch of work to do at the monastery, and they're just yammering and talking. And, you know, the Buddha encourages us to really, you know, spend time talking about things that are maybe meaningful, you know, and sharing about things that are valuable. We're not going to do this all the time, but, you know, it's maybe something to be aware of is what he calls frivolous chatter, which is this just like kind of extra white noise, talking for the sake of talking. Another thing that the Buddha talked about is refraining from gossip and divisive speech. I still don't know why it feels so good to talk shit, but it's like one of the best feelings in the world. I think I learned this from my family system too. I hope my mom and sister don't listen to this. I don't think they do, but they were really good at talking shit about people growing up, and so there was kind of this like family ritual around it. And the, you know, it's funny, but at the same time, one of the things I've noticed about being around like friends that gossip a lot about our other friends is I trust them less with my stuff. You know, so there's like these really subtle ways that like gossip and what the Buddha calls divisive speech, which is this kind of like, you know, like sharing our contempt and resentment and blame and judgment for other people. You know, trying to divide is, you know, causes a lot of suffering, not only for the person, but for ourselves. It's kind of this feeling that we need to protect ourselves by putting other people down or by persuading someone that, you know, someone else is, you know, however we perceive them to be. And another thing that I like to share on this topic is the importance of clarity and what I like to call being direct. And this is something that I've had to work on a lot, which is to say what I mean without being mean when I say it. To try to speak more about, like, what do I mean? What do I actually mean? And this has been huge because a lot of what I struggle with is trying to carpet the room, right? Trying to make everything soft, therefore to avoid conflict. And sometimes it's incredibly important to try to be direct. Socrates said that, "I have noticed that anyone who is to form a right or a wise judgment must have three qualities: understanding, goodwill, and readiness to be perfectly frank." This is one of the beautiful things, many problematic things about classic philosophers, but one of the beautiful things about, you know, Plato writing about Socrates is his willingness to try to stay in a conversation until clarity has come about, right? The willingness to be direct, to say what, you know, he says and mean what he says. Like Socrates, if you read any of these, I read a book called Gorgias recently, and he talks a lot about like wanting, he argues with people, and he wants the people to stay in the argument. So he like really, he asks them to not leave. Like they're arguing and he's like, don't walk away from this. Like we've got to like stay in this and be clear, and we've got to be direct. You know, you see how some of these things seem to contradict each other. But I find that this is an important skill for me to practice, is the clarity and directness. Part of this is being willing to engage in difficult conversations. Something that's maybe helpful to reflect, some of us are conflict averse, and some of us are, you know, conflict prone, and that's okay. Some of us tend to overreact in conflict, and some of us tend to underreact. And these are usually conditioned things from like our families and the messages that we got about what emotions were okay to share and whether conflict was acceptable. Some families like yell each other at each other, and that's like the way they communicate. Those are probably more conflict prone people, you know, to overreact. And then there are the folks that maybe got the messages that being in disharmony was like the worst thing in the world, and to not talk about problems. So do we tend to lean in or lean out of having difficult conversations? And if we tend to lean out, the encouragement is to lean in, to practice. Practice having difficult conversations. It really takes something that takes intention. If for me, being a more conflict-avoidant person, I have kind of an erratic tendency with this. Sometimes I'm very conflict-prone, but in some situations, I'm conflict-avoidant. I've really had to encourage myself, like give myself a pep talk to have the difficult conversation. Or if we tend to kind of lean in that direction, to lean out. There's so much to say. I want to say a couple things that feel important to me, and then we'll open it up. One is also being willing to engage with people that have different views and opinions. We can't develop compassion without understanding. I think so much of the time, like, I struggle with this, what my teacher calls those people. And this tendency to, you know, like, really create an enemy. And to stay in a battle. Now, there are times when it's like, totally appropriate to not engage with people that have different views and opinions. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, if we're aware in the moment, we know those times. We know those times when it's time to disengage and to, you know. And I think it's harder to try to stay in relationship with people that have different views and opinions within reason. Again, if views and opinions are directly harmful or threatening to our safety, you know, but I think, again, we know those experiences if we're in the moment and aware. You know, I have some friends on Facebook that their posts make me cringe every time I read them. And I realized, like, probably a couple years ago, I, like, went through this phase, probably actually more a year ago, but went through this phase of, like, unfriending people or, like, hiding their feed. And then I, like, started to just be, like, being fed all the people that were, like, sharing my same view. And that was really easy. You know, it was like, yeah, you know, we kind of all got on the same team. You know, but then we're sitting here and it's like we're all on the same team and we're all in this together. But then we're like, where's the other team? It's like showing up to the game and we've got our team, but there's no other team there to play. And so again, this is like engaging with different views and opinions, I think in this day and age is very important. Not only for ourselves, but for future generations. We have to figure shit out. And some of us, you know, have more privilege and the ability to stay engaged. You know, it is more safe for some of us to engage in conversations than others. And, you know, we should have those conversations and we should stay engaged. All right, last but not least, setting limits for ourselves and saying no. This has been a huge practice. And I was going to actually have you guys do a practice tonight. I won't make you do it. That I learned in one of my trainings, where you pair up with someone and one of the people asks a reasonable request from you and you say no. And then they ask again, and you say no again. And they ask for like 5 minutes and try to like really encourage you, and you keep having to say no. It's a very powerful practice. You know, because it's something that I think a lot of us struggle with, is kind of just being able to put a period at the end of that sentence. I think they taught in English, I don't remember grammar, but you have to have like a subject and a predicate. I think no is a complete sentence. No. You know, so these are some of my thoughts. I'd love to open it up. We've got 7 or 8 minutes or so just for some sharing, personal reflections. Feel free to share on anything that...